The fifth of the five finalists for UP Poet Laureate is Andrea Scarpino, who is my in-studio guest this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Now, I'd like to, first of all, congratulate you on kind of rising up to that level of finalist for this particular round of UP Poet Laureate. When you were notified of it, what went through your mind?
You know, it's really an honor, I have to say. The other folks who were nominated are all very accomplished poets, and to just to be in their company feels really special. So, and I haven't lived in the UP very long. I've only been here 5 years about. So, it feels extra special, I guess, to feel like I'm adopted by this community in a way.
What is it about what you write that you think attracted people to think that you should represent the UP?
That's a good question, you know, because I think a lot of my poetry to date hasn't been set in the UP, although I have noticed of recent years that I've been writing more about winter. And Lake Superior actually has been a huge influence in the past couple of years since moving here. I've really written just poem after poem about the lake. I really love it. But I think I have a passion for poetry that people see, and I think a lot of my work tries to grapple with really big issues and really big conversations. And I think people in the UP are comfortable having those conversations.
When you began writing, was that one of the goals you had in mind, is to bring up very strong issues or subjects and try to communicate that to people?
You know, I don't know if that was kind of an explicit goal that I had, but I think I've always tried to use language to make sense of the world. You know, I had kind of a chaotic childhood, as many people do, I guess. And I think I turned to writing and to poetry to try to make sense of things that were happening that I couldn't kind of make sense of any other way. And so I think it's always been part of almost my DNA, I guess, to read and to write and to talk to other people about books and to use them as a tool to order our universe.
It sounds like your writing is more or less thinking out loud for you, isn't it?
First drafts definitely are. Yes. Yeah. In the revision process, I spent a lot of time, you know, refining and making language pop. But I think a first draft definitely does that for me.
Your one publication that recently came out called Once Then really does deal with that subject of loss and death and the whole process. Has it been therapeutic for you to write this and then have it out there to discuss with other people?
In a lot of ways, yes. And in a lot of ways, no, I guess. So I started writing the book after my dad died. And then I had 3 weeks later, a good friend named Dan was killed, was murdered outside of his home on a random Saturday morning, which, you know, makes no sense at all. And then a few years later, I lost a good friend's daughter, Gracie, in a car accident. So I think the poems in their initial drafts were just kind of coping mechanisms, right? I didn't know how to get through my day. And so I started writing and writing and writing. And then at a certain point, I realized, okay, I'm writing elegies. I should start reading elegies, right? I should figure out what the elegy is doing out in the world. So I started reading elegies. And that really became a nice focus for my grief, I think, for a long time, just to have a project and know what I was doing every morning, and not have to feel so out kind of on the sea of grief, I guess. But then at a certain point, I started to think, oh, I have this kind of group of poems, maybe this could be a book. Then it switched out of the grieving process into the artistic process, right? How can I pull these poems together? How do they talk to one another? What do I need to do to make this cohesive? And that became more of an intellectual or artistic, I guess, exercise than kind of a grieving exercise. And I have to say, in the past year, when I've been out doing readings, and I did 20 readings last year in support of Once Then, which is a lot, I've felt this tension of reliving this experience, you know, and talking about my dad and having these really painful conversations with other people who've lost people, because, you know, everybody has lost someone they loved. And so I think even if you haven't lost your dad or a friend or whatever, you connect on that level. So having those difficult conversations has been therapeutic in a way, but also just really painful. And it was unexpected. I didn't kind of expect to have so many people want to share their stories. And I'm so grateful for that. But it also has meant that I have to kind of relive mine again and again, which has been an interesting experience.
So you're influencing not just yourself, but many, many other people in your writing. Now, when you read these poems aloud, especially this collection, is it easier now to read them aloud? Or is it just as like ripping the Band-Aid off the wound again?
You know, it really depends. I think sometimes it does feel like that, ripping the Band-Aid off again. I mean, I have a good friend who's a musician who, you know, does hundreds of shows a year. And I asked him about that, playing the same songs over and over. And he said something that I thought was really interesting, which was that he tries to embody the song anew for every new audience, because that audience hasn't experienced it before, you know? And so I do think I try to go into that space again. And there are times when that's really painful. I did a reading in Boston last year. I think it was in April, at the high school where my friend Gracie attended before she was killed. And there were her friends who were there in the classroom with me. And they asked me some really hard questions. You know, I had a girl who said something like, how do you think Gracie would feel to know that you were writing these poems about her? And it kind of broke my heart, because I thought, you know, she may not like them if she were here.
And how are you going to know?
Right. Yeah. Yes. Right. And so that was a particularly tough reading, to be in the space where Gracie was, and to read in front of her friends and peers and classmates, and to know they had experienced this horrible loss too, in losing her and losing her a dear friend. So there are times like that that are particularly hard, I think. And then there are others that aren't so hard, that are more joyful, I guess. I did a reading at the University of Cincinnati Claremont College also last spring, and my dad had taught at the University of Cincinnati, and just kind of out of the blue, one of his students came up, one of his former graduate students afterwards, and talked to me and brought me back to his office, and he's a professor there now, and he showed me a picture he had on his bulletin board of him and my dad, which was so lovely. I know, it was just such a lovely, joyful moment to know that kind of my dad's legacy with his students was continuing in the same university, but in a really special, different way.
Wow. That's amazing. I'd like to talk about other writing you've been doing, or since this was published. Do you have something that's in the works, as I say?
Right, yeah, I have a couple of things I've been working on. So since this book came out, I've been working actually on my PhD in creative writing through Bass-Spa University. And that is a collection, what's a book-length poem. So I'm actually going to be defending my dissertation shortly here, hopefully successfully. But that book-length poem is on the body as a site of loss, and tries to kind of deal with specifically the chronic pain experience, but also more generally how we think about our bodies. I use the ash tree as a mythological figure connected to the body, because there are some interesting creation stories that use the ash tree as kind of where human beings came from. And there's some interesting stories about pain and healing with the ash tree. So that book-length poem is pretty much finished. I'm kind of sending it out now for publication. And I have another newer project that I've been working on that is kind of based in childhood mythology and uses some mythology around birds, specifically swans, and kind of archetypes of mother and father and brother and sister, to talk about my childhood in a way, but slanted. So Emily Dickinson has this poem that begins, "Tell all the truth, but tell it slant." And I think about that often when I'm writing. So I'm telling the truth, but kind of from an angle, right?
Is that a defensive move on your part?
Oh, that's interesting. It might be, but I also think it's a way to not become myopic, right? Not just to stare at my belly button all day, but to think about larger stories. And I love mythology. I mean, everything I've written has kind of had some sort of slanted look at mythology, or using mythology to tell kind of contemporary stories. So I think that's something that I just kind of enjoy doing as well.
Now, if you indeed are the UP Poet Laureate for the next 2 years, do you have any idea of what you would like to do with this?
I have some nascent ideas, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, Russ Sorbrick has really set the standard pretty high, I think, for all of us. And I'm so glad he was the first one, because he really embodies the UP in so many different and interesting ways. But I think something I've always really liked about poet laureates on the national scale is when they just get out and talk to people, you know, and I think Russell did this too, kind of bringing poetry to everyday folks. I would love to do some sort of newspaper column, maybe in the Mining Journal or on campus, that kind of has a monthly discussion about poetry, maybe poetry book reviews. I mean, there's so many people who I meet who say, oh, I never really got poetry, right? I never really understood it, which I always think is so funny, because we don't really say that about other things, right? We don't say, oh, I never really got movies or something. So I always feel like, no, you've been introduced to the wrong people, because everybody can get poetry. I think it's such a great medium for our time. You know, poems tend to be short. There, you can read one in 3 minutes, you know. You can read it on your phone. You can read it on the go when you're, you know, in transport somewhere else. So in our fast-paced life, I think poetry is really a perfect literature. And I'd like to help people understand that more, that it doesn't have to be this highfalutin thing that you don't understand and there's one key and you have to find the key to unlock the meaning. It doesn't have to be like that. It can be playful language. It can be, you know, ways to cope through loss. It can be ways to experience joy. It can really meet you at so many different moments of your life.
Yes, way beyond just greeting cards.
Yeah, oh gosh, yes. Yes, throw away the greeting card industry. I would like to burn it all.
Was there anything else you'd like to add?
Again, I'm honored to be included in this group of poets. And I think no matter who is kind of anointed for this particular term, they're going to do a great job. And it's a real boon to the UP to have such an active writing community. I mean, I think when I moved to the UP, I didn't even know it existed. I had no idea what the Upper Peninsula of Michigan was. So to come here and to find so many writers doing so much great work and really being invested in the larger poetry community has been such a gift. So it's wonderful to be able to possibly represent that.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stan.